Blog Talk Radio.
Darlings,
bonjour mes amis, comment ça va? Ça va bien? I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. It's 3 weeks from tonight. It's Christmas Eve. It's very exciting. I know that many of us aren't feeling very Christmassy. We're trying to do everything we can to watch like old reruns of Christmas Carol, all the different Christmas carols that were made in the 30s and 40s and the different versions later, Scrooge and Scrooged, and we're watching It's a Wonderful Life and The Bishop's Wife, and oh my God, every single Christmas thing we can do, we're trying to go through our Christmas decorations if we haven't all broken them or disposed of them all. I mean, darlings, there's a lot of sour energy out in the world, and I must tell you, Mummy has been traveling. As you know, I just got back from Wisconsin and from Texas and from Minnesota. I've gone to, the latest count is 17 states in the last 3 months. I've been in 17 states in the last 3 months. I was
wow.
In the red. Hello?
I said,
are we on?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Wow is right. By the way, ladies and gentlemen at home, Mummy is back in her New York studio, the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin, high atop the beautiful Chrysler Building. And that is my producer, my beloved and loyal and fabulous and supportive and nurturing and mystical and magical and slightly discombobulated. There's all sorts of words there. That's Gwendolyn Holden Berry. And by the way, for those of you writing Christmas cards to her, please don't hyphenate the name. If you hyphenate it, the post office won't deliver it. It's Gwendolyn Holden Berry. Holden as in William Holden and Berry as in Jean Berry, and no relation to any of them. Anyway, so that's Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm fair to middling.
are you trying to keep some Christmas cheer in your heart during these troubled times?
Oh, yes. And if I don't do it, my little sister does. She titty-fairied the whole place up and got the lights out. And, you know, because we need a little Christmas.
Exactly. You know something? There are certain rituals that the most cynical of us can shake our head sadly and say, oh, that's so forlorn. I walked by St. Patrick's yesterday and I couldn't help but drop in. And I'm not Catholic, by the way. As a matter of fact, I'm not particularly Christian, but I'm sort of pantheistic. But anyway, what I was going to say is that I was watching people come in, and they, of course, you know, genuflected in front of the altar, you know, as they enter the church, and then they touch they go to the holy water, and they bless themselves, et cetera, et cetera.
Spectacle,
and I was
spectacle.
Watching that. What is it? I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing, never mind, a little Catholic thing.
Were you being naughty just then?
I was being so naughty.
Oh, dear. Well, I was about to say that I was watching that ritual and watching them go through the rituals and everything. And there are rituals that we all have that are either from superstitions or from religious feelings or spiritual feelings or whatever. We each have our journey, and I can't resent anyone on their journeys. I just can't. Provided that people's journeys and religious practices don't harm animals or children, basically whatever they do is pretty much all right, as long as they're not harming children or animals, which is why I will never be a fan of Santeria, no matter what excuses they use for animal sacrifice. It's like they say that the chicken farming in the Americas is much crueler than the average, you know, Santeria festival in the Bronx, whatever. I'm not a fan of that. But anyway, going back to what I was saying, I think that sometimes, I've known this from different people, it's fascinating to me how people who feel that Christmas is just not happening for them this year, I have often been asked that, and I have said, go through the ritual of putting up some Christmas decorations, go out, either if you have them in your closet or in your attic, pull them out, put them up, just do it. Put on some music that's funny. I put on the Muzak channel with all the Cornball, Dean Martin, It's a Marshmallow World songs, and Bing Crosby, you know, singing Makalaka, Hi, you know, a Hawaiian Christmas thing. And I put on my grass skirt, my coconut brassiere, and I dance around the house, and I go through the rituals, and it does make me feel a little better. So yes. I know there are going to be people that are rolling their eyes and saying, oh my God, Moni is so old and so corny. But there's one of you out there will hear that and say, you know what? I have a coconut brassiere and a grass skirt, and I have a recording of Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters. And I also have a Christmas wreath that's wrapped in plastic waiting to be taken out, you know, and I'll put some new ornaments on it or something. And I do it and see. I just think that I think that we've got to work very hard right now with the world situation is and the increasingly loathsome situation that we live through in this country right now. Never before in all my years, all the presidencies I've survived, I have never seen a more reliably excremental, loathsome presidency and a party that is supporting it. I've never seen the stink become literally not only nauseating, but lethal. The stink is lethal. And we have got Gwendolyn, you, me, our home audience, everyone that we can touch and shake hands with or pat on the back or kiss on the cheek or hold the door for or say thank you to when they hold the door for us, that we've got to reach out and spread cheer. And before you gang up on me and you people at home, you think you're siblings, you think you're fans of Sybil, and then you reprimand me constantly. But before you jump on me and say, well, that's just escapism. Well, your Sybil Brunch and Lollipop Guild is escapism. It is not escapism. I am not suggesting that we ignore what is wrong. I am not suggesting that we pretend it's not there. I'm suggesting that as we continue on together as happy warriors, as Al Smith and Franklin Roosevelt would have said, as happy warriors, that we also keep the happy in the warrior. We've got to challenge the bad things in life with our own glad heart.
It's good mental health. It keeps us anchored in our humanity.
Yes. Yes. And it keeps us healthy. It keeps us healthy spiritually. It keeps our motives sunnier. We keep fighting our battles from a joyous place, a sunny place, not from an equally dark and dank place as our adversaries. We've got to use humor. We've got to use joy. We've got to use the embrace of beauty and culture and courtesy. But we wield them as weapons. We do wield them as weapons against the uncouth, the banal, the rude, the coarse, the bigoted. Yeah. And speaking of bigoted, before I go on, I just want to announce that, by the way, our sponsor tonight always is, of course, daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And Gwendolyn is is not only my producer, but she is also the foundatrix of that wonderful company. And I want you to be sure to go to daughtersofisis.com. That is a website that you go to and you can see all of their amazing products and order some for Christmas. And I think that Christmas this year should be less about possessions and more about experience. So I think that you should go and look at their stuff because their things are wonderful experiential gifts and gifts to oneself too. Is that a good way of describing it, Gwendolyn?
Oh yeah, it's a door which you open with your nose into really wonderful memories.
Isn't that great? Using your nose to bring new awareness to yourself. We use our eyes. What is the statistic is that 80% of what we do and decide and reflect on and think and take in is through our eyes. And the other 20% is our hearing, our smell, taste, and touch. But it is fascinating to get in touch with our sense of smell because that is even more, I don't want to use the word primitive, but it's earlier. It's more primeval. There, that's the better word. It's a primeval sense.
It awakens consciousness in the womb because we taste and smell mother and father before anything else. It wakes us up to our lives. It's consciousness.
There. So you see, so do go to daughtersofisis.com and explore their products, read the descriptions. The product, the ingredients are extraordinary. The unbelievable ingredients, just amazing. And I have a selection of the products here that I use and have been traveling with, and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much, Gwendolyn, for opening my eyes and mind and nose to this wonderful, wonderful world of products. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I think that we should, is there something that we should know about for the holidays? Is there a fragrance that maybe is one that we should know about for the holidays? Do you have something special for the holidays?
Well, in the next few days, I put up our Winter Fairy and the Holly King and the Oak King blends.
Perfect.
They're
and just in time for Mercury
selection.
To go forward again, right?
Right. And the next, actually, you can feel Mercury moving forward now.
That's great. So for those of you that are very affected by Mercury in retrograde, that and the full moon last week, and it's all sort of coinciding together. So there's a lot to be grateful for right now and a lot to open up for. So check out daughtersofisis.com and their products. Make sure you check that out tonight after the show. I want to get back to what we were talking about, and that is that I posted on Facebook. I want to go to happy things. Oh, by the way, I'm going to quickly give you the phone number here. It's 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Call in and talk to Mummy. Let's talk about anything you'd like tonight. But I do want to mention that the rash of anti-Semitism, which has been going on lately with synagogues and with Jewish schools, and then just with Jewish people in New York, let alone across the country. If it's going on in New York, it's absolutely shocking. But whatever it's doing in New York is nothing compared to what it's doing in other parts of the country. I will hesitate to name the states, but there are states that are much more anti-Semitic than New York and New York City. And we're even having incidents in New York City, in Brooklyn. It's astounding that we're having this. And I just want to reiterate that, in my opinion, anti-Semitism, first of all, I want to just say this. Whether you think Israel is doing the right thing or the wrong thing right now, whether you think Netanyahu is a hero or whether you think he's an absolute bastard, the bottom line is this, that there is no room to return to an anti-Semitic world like in the 1920s and 30s and the 50s.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitism is a forlorn and banal holdover from a medieval time. And that, and all bigotry actually is, but I want to specifically mention anti-Semitism tonight because, of course, we've begun the beautiful ritual of, not Yom Kippur, God,
Hanukkah.
I'm trying to play. Hanukkah, of course. I'm sorry, I'm doing too many things. I'm looking at the switchboard, I'm doing all sorts of things. I'm watching private messages coming in on my computer right now, on my laptop. Hanukkah, the beautiful tradition of Hanukkah, we've begun, and I'm going to lay some guilt on some people as well as some guilt, and that is there is no room for any anti-Semitism. This is ridiculous. A 9-year-old boy left a grocery store two nights ago in Brooklyn and was carrying groceries home, and they had on camera from across the street, a security camera, some equally young kid ran across the street and pushed the little boy down. The groceries went all over the ground and I guess were broken and everything and destroyed. And he was hurt kind of seriously. I mean, he certainly scraped his knees, scraped his palms. I mean, he went flat down. And they are looking for the kid that did this. And I think that they should get the kid and the parents. And I'm getting I think my liberal credentials are pretty well known, but I am also getting to the point where when the blade falls, it falls. Those parents and that child, to hell with the fact that he's a minor, he should be humiliated and his parents should be humiliated. That's all there is to it. And that knife cuts both ways. It cuts in all directions, including the $96 million that the MTA is going to be short from last year because of fair jumping. We have fair jumping going on in this city so bad that the MTA is out $96 million. $96 million from fair jumping. And tonight, NBC did an article on it, a news article, and showed they had the cameras running. And they showed people jumping the gates, jumping, opening, going through the swinging doors, everything. I blame the MTA for this 20 years ago when they installed the turnstiles they did. I blame them. When they installed those turnstiles and the various things that they did, there was no security on them. They should be the huge mesh turnstiles that you can't get through, and there should be a totally different security system of how to get into the subways. It's ridiculous. So, and we see it every day. People jumping the turnstiles, going through the gates. The gate swings open and people walk through. Inexcusable. $96 million.
Wow.
And then we get mad. We get mad at the MTA because the trains aren't on time or aren't clean or whatever, blah, 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 on and on. $96 million? $96
million? Wow.
When you see a fare jumper, when you see a person who is jumping their fare, they are the problem. They are the problem. They are the enemy. And that blade cuts that way too. Believe me, Mummy is an equal opportunity executioner. Equal opportunity. It's inexcusable that people are doing that. So that's enough of that.
How much does it cost? How much does it cost for, I know.
Well, when Mummy first came to the city, well, first of all, you lived here. So how much was it when you lived here?
The last time I actually bought tokens, I think they were $1.25 a piece.
Okay, first of all, we haven't got tokens anymore. A token is like a rarity. They're being made into jewelry. Or they're being smelted down and turned into arms for Iraq, you know, and Afghanistan.
I have one in my medicine bag.
Well, keep it. Keep it. I have examples of all the different ones. I have examples of all the different ones they came up with.
They came up
with some cute ones. But they are completely out of service now because no machine can take them anymore, nor can the bus take them anymore. They're useless. So we use Metro cards. Even if you're only here for 2 days, you have to buy a Metro card to get on a bus or a subway. But when Mummy first got here, it was like a nickel. So now it's, you know, $27.95 or something. It's a fortune. I mean, it's $2.75 or something. It's a lot of money compared to what it was.
Wow.
And it kept going up. But I'll tell you something, $96 million, that $96 million, and if it's a yearly thing, that's where the fares go up. That's where the fares are going up. That's where the subways are getting dirtier. It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to point fingers at certain people or certain kinds of people or whatever, but what I am going to say is whoever you are, whatever age you are, whatever background or religion or ethnic background, whatever color you are, if you have one eye in the middle of your forehead, if you're an Olympic athlete, whatever you are, if you're jumping turnstiles and you're cheating on the subways, you are the problem. And this is one time when we cannot blame the rich. And believe me, Mummy is very comfortable blaming the rich. Mummy is very comfortable blaming the rich. I'm very comfortable blaming Donald Trump, who built all those skyscrapers over on the Hudson River and made no increased arrangement for mass transit for them. He didn't increase bus lines. He didn't increase the subway thing. He did nothing for that. And that was brutal. The subway's now up at West 72nd Street. The platform, which they did enlarge, finally they had to, is so dangerous during rush hour. People are literally, it's thousands of people trying to get in there during rush hour. And the rich make no attempt to get the working class where they need to be. So I blame the rich, you know, very comfortably. But this whole thing of fare jumping, I'm sick of it, and I'm sick of seeing it on film. It's ridiculous, the film they showed us tonight. And then they interviewed some idiot girl who laughed about it. You know, the talking head things. They said, well, how do you feel about the fair jumping? And she had a big old hoo-ha about it and laughed and said that she had done it, and it was blah, 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 blah. She thought it was funny. If she worked for me, I would call her in. I would have the HR representative there, and I would say, you represent everything that this company is not about. You are absolutely not what this company is about. Whether I had her as a maid or a secretary, or she was working in a corporation, I would have her out on the street. I was flabbergasted that she would make a joke out of something that is technically a misdemeanor. It's a crime. It's not a felony, but it is a misdemeanor, and it is an arrestable offense too. It is arrestable.
Oh, yeah,
and that was the other thing about the article, is that the police are too busy with other things to have to do that. Even with crime falling, the police are too busy to arrest subway jumpers and then to follow it up by having them go to court, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll tell you something. We're getting off on a track here, but the drunk driving, the texting driving, the penalties, I hear the news, you know, three people killed in a texting driving accident, and the texter survives and the three other people die. What is he going to get? 8 years. 8 years. Eight years. And that's 8 years if he serves it. What if it's 8 years and then in 3 years they say, well, you know what? You were kind of well-behaved when you got your meatloaf at lunch every day. We're going to let you out now. What? 8 years for people dying in a car accident. That's ridiculous. You should be there for 28 years, 38 years. It's ridiculous. Penalties for terrible things, because nobody is taking anything seriously anymore. Children don't take anything serious. No, there is nothing serious anymore. We are allowed to hurt each other and get away with it. It's a big joke. It's a big joke. And the only people that are punished at all, most of the time, are minority people.
That's right.
So if a black guy sells a joint, he'll go away for 28 years. But if you have these rich bitches in Washington doing what they're doing, and it's white-collar crime with an emphasis on the white, and they get pardoned by a Nazi war criminal. You know what I mean? It's like if they behave themselves or they don't tell too much, they'll be pardoned by a Nazi war criminal. I'm exasperated. And that's why, children, that's why mommy was dancing around in her coconut brassiere and her grass skirt too. It's a marshmallow world for Christmas by Dean Martin, because I had to find some Christmas spirit. I mean, if I go out on the street, I can find the same bad stuff, but I can also find the same lovely stuff. I can see people smile and hold doors for each other at the cafe. I can see people say politely, oh, listen, you're looking for a seat. Why don't you join me at my table at Starbucks? Yes, there are the selfish people who sit there and spread out all their papers and their computer and don't buy one thing at Starbucks and take over table number 8 as an office for 4 hours. But there are other people at another table who have 2 chairs there. They're sitting in one and they say, oh, do you want to sit down? Why don't you share my table with me? That's the future, I hope. And that's what we need to be embracing for Christmas. So I've gone full circle on that.
The windows at Bergdorf's.
Yes, I love – well, Bergdorf's and Saks, I love looking at all the windows. I'm sad about Lord & Taylor going, and, of course, I am devastated, and I don't want to get angry again, but I'm devastated at Bendel's closing. I'm beside myself that Bendel's is gone. For those of you at home that don't know what Bendel's is, and New Yorkers who don't know, which is unforgivable, it's like saying, I'm a New Yorker. I've lived here my whole life and was born here. No, I've never been to the top of the Empire State Building. Well, you're a jackass. But that's another topic for another time. It's ridiculous. I was just in Dearborn, Michigan. I was just in Detroit. And my Uber driver, I went to the Henry Ford Museum. Greenfield Village was closed, but the Henry Ford Museum was open. And it is a miracle. It is a wonder. Even though they've changed it dramatically sometime in the last 20 years, it still is a miracle. of technology and science and Americanism. If you want to see what America has done well, go to the museum, the Henry Ford Museum, and go to all its different wings, the aviation wing, obviously the automotive wing. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary museum. It's huge. It takes up acres of land and is an amazing achievement. Anyway, I was there, and my Uber driver, he said, "Oh, you're going to the Henry Ford." I said, "Yes, isn't it amazing?" He said, "I've never been." I said, "You've never been there? How long have you lived in Dearborn?" And he said, "My whole life." I said, "Aren't you close to my age?" He said, "Oh, yes." He was 3 years older than me. And he said, "No, I never got around to going." I had such a hard time pointing and hoo-haing at him. It was like I just wanted to yahoo at him over and over again. It's like, how do you live? And by the way, he hasn't not gone because Dearborn is a city of 8 million people with so many wonders and so many miracles and so many boroughs that you could never get around to going. At Dearborn, there's fewer people living in Dearborn than are in the Cafe Berlin right now, standing around at the bar looking at me doing the show right now. We've got more people in here than live in Dearborn. It's ridiculous. How could you not have done that? What New Yorker does not get around to going to the top of the Empire State Building? And what New Yorker has not been to the Statue of Liberty? You have to go to the Statue of Liberty. You have to go and stand there and look at it. You don't have to look at it as a patriotic thing or as a thing about, you know, some sentimental thing about the fact that your relatives came over from Bosnia in 1870.
Oh, yes,
no, you need to go and just look at the fact that they could even make something that looks like that. The thing that everyone says when they go to the Statue of Liberty is, "I had no idea it was so big." No one ever goes there and says, "Oh, I had no idea it was so small." You go there and stand there. You're not even allowed up in it anymore. Mummy has been up all the way into it over and over and over again. But when you stand on the island and you go into the little museum and the shop and you're standing around at the bottom and you're walking around the full, it's like staggering to look at it. It's huge. And it doesn't seem possible that someone could build something like that and ship it.
Not only build it, but then ship it over here and reassemble it. I went and I said, "Vive la France, Bartholomew," you know, wonderful. And you know that it has a little brother in Paris.
It has what?
A little sister in Paris. There's a little sister.
Yeah. Well, anytime that people think that the French aren't good for anything, you just go and look at that and just bear in mind that they did that. And yes, they needed, you know, pennies from American children to finish it because of their economic challenge back then. But the very fact that they were doing it, it was a token of esteem between two countries that have mostly had wonderful relations and should have wonderful relations.
That's our brother country. It's our brother country. It always has been.
Yeah. Well, you know, people don't study history, but if it weren't for the French, we wouldn't have America. It was the French that helped finance our revolution. And when the British were financing their half of the revolution against us, they were, because they didn't have enough British soldiers, they were hiring the Germans. And we were lucky because the French jumped right in. They had a political agenda against the British, but they did finance and support us and sent over several heroes to us, including Lafayette. And not to be really horrible, but the French government went bankrupt because they supported the American Revolution. And that was one of the things that triggered the French Revolution. The French peasantry said, "You know what? Louis is so comfortable about spending money on the American Revolution. Why don't we take an example from them?" And they modeled their own revolution against their own monarchy. They watched us revolting against King George, and they said, "You know what? Louis the 16th is right next door. George is thousands of miles away from the American colonies, but Marie and Louis are having a cocktail party. Let's go kick in their door and drag them out to the street." And that's what happened. So the revolution, the last thing I'm sure Louis was thinking was, "Gee, that supporting that revolution over there in America was kind of maybe not such a great idea." Well, too late now. Slunk. So anyway, when we think about the French, we should remember the Statue of Liberty. And I got off on a tangent on that. But speaking of the French, they're going through serious riots right now. And
yes,
I am going to, say this, and I know I'm going to catch hell from someone, but what they're rioting about is very much comfortable to me. The economic situation there is ridiculous. And is their middle class, their working class, is saying, we have had enough. I'm not interested in the bigotries that might be involved in some of it. I'm not interested in racism that might be involved in some of it. But in fact, the people rioting and demonstrating have been many races, have been all races, who are all getting chewed up by the ridiculous money that is going on. And this may be the beginning of an economic revolution that will be worldwide. Not unlike the revolution in 1848. You know, there's been economic revolutions before, so this is not news. This is not new news. It's, you know, it's happened before. So the 1848 was when Europe had all sorts of revolutions going on, and mostly about economics, again, economics. So anyway,
a little revolution now and then is good for us, though.
Yes. Thomas Jefferson said the tree of liberty must be watered sometimes with the blood of both patriots and tyrants. And yes, unfortunately, it seems that human beings, they learn a certain amount, and we take two steps forward, and then we take one step back. I'm hoping that we are mostly taking steps forward. You know, people say, well, politics is a pendulum. And I say, well, I like to think of it as a pendulum, a freight car. And it's the freight car is moving down the track, sometimes imperceptibly. And the pendulum may swing forward to liberalism and intelligence and progress. And then sometimes it might swing back a little bit into bigotry and the dark ages and everything. And it swings forward and backward. But it's sort of moving the freight car slowly forward more than backward. Is that a good image, Gwendolyn?
Oh, I think it is. And on that note, you have a little forward motion with your switchboard here. We have a caller.
Oh, great. I'll take it.
All right.
Hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
This is Richard from California.
Richard, how are you? I hear you've just been to Paris.
I was an American in Paris. My name is Jerry Mulligan, and I'm an American who lives here.
Do you have the same handsome scar that Gene Kelly does on
his face? Yeah, what was that scar? I always wondered about that scar on his face.
You know what? It's like Harrison Ford's scar. It's like, you know, it's they could have gotten rid of it, but no, it's there's something kind of cute and fun about it. What were you doing in Paris? How long were you there?
Well, we were there in 2009. I played a concert there at the Paris Conservatory, and we had never been there before. But to me, it is and will always be the most romantic city in the world.
Yes.
I have friends who've traveled everywhere, and they say that their two favorite cities are Florence and Paris. They say they're both just exquisite.
One must be in love when they go there, because
absolutely,
it's very clear our love is here to stay, not for a year.
Oh, Richard,
what did you do?
Drink a whole gallon of cornball juice tonight? My goodness,
cornball juice. I'm a cornball. No, but I mean,
long were you there, by the way? How long were you there?
We were there about 6 days, and then, but then I played the concert, and then we went to the Impressionistic Museum, the Musée d'Orsay. Thank you, wife. Musée d'Orsay. We did all the, it was just wonderful. It was just wonderful to see all that art and those beautiful boulevards.
Nice.
And the Champs-Élysées and Montmartre at night, and Sacré-Cœur. Oh,
dear. And it's so good to find out that the Musée d'Orsay is not a museum dedicated to Fifi d'Orsay. You know something? I had figured for years that there was just an entire building dedicated to her, her feather boas and her bloomers and everything. And I was so glad to find out that it
was a
legitimate museum. The lies that Fifi had been telling for years about it. Fifi would tell Americans, you know, adoring Americans, and of course, my dear, when you go to Paris, you will see a museum dedicated completely to me and my career. And it was like, okay, Fifi, you're a big fat French liar. There you go.
What I've been fascinated about is you have certainly gotten a taste of what this country is all about, traveling Middletown America like you have.
Yes.
You really can't understand what this country is about until you go to these small towns and you go to Middletown America and you go to the flea markets and you go to the town square and everybody looks at you like, what the hell are you doing here? We don't know who you are. Get out of here. We don't know who you are.
Yeah, I'm the 21st century. I'm the 21st century Andy Mame right now. I go into these places and I walk into the middle of town. I went into Milwaukee's the third ward, the historic third ward, which is their version of Greenwich Village. And they were lighting their Christmas tree and they brought Santa in and they had this whole festival of people coming from all over Milwaukee down to their Greenwich Village version of Milwaukee. And it was adorable, but it was, I mean, you know, I was walking around and meeting people and going to the chocolate chip cookie stand and going to the gingerbread house and all of the novelties and things. And it's true. You see America, you talk to the people. I'm telling you, I've taken 35 Uber rides. That alone. Uber rides and who drives the Ubers, you know, the people that drive the Ubers from people from Bangladesh and Afghanistan to Madagascar to Argentina to, you know, three-toothed white hillbillies who have fallen on a hard times and are trying to make a go of it. And
a deliverance type of character.
Yes, but you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised at your surprise because what's interesting is that people are as many cliches as you can find. There are the things that break. There are anomalies. There's an anomaly for every. You can find the deliverance hillbilly hating George Bush. George Bush's guts and Donald Trump's guts, and seeing right through what was phony and a lie. And they're not hating Donald Trump from the right. They're not wishing that he was more of a Nazi. They are liberal, open-minded people who have African-American friends and Jewish friends, and they just happen to be, you know, poor white people from Appalachia.
Well, you know something,
there's all sorts of stuff.
But, you know, that what you're telling me is a testament to the changing of times, because you couldn't have said that probably 50 years ago.
True.
No.
In small-town America. I mean, people, don't you understand? People in small-town America, they went to bed with their doors unlocked. They all knew each other's business. The church was the center of everything, the church. And if anybody tried to penetrate that Jim Anderson and Betty Anderson and Margaret Anderson, Father Knows Best life, it was rejected. It was scandalous. They didn't want it. But I think it's changing. It's changing.
It is absolutely changing, and partly because of television has opened is inside everyone's home,
and the internet too.
Completely. But the internet is totally the child is the eldest son of television, because gay issues even were being addressed on All in the Family 35 years ago.
They certainly were.
That's right. And Mary Tyler Moore. There were shows that were on TV where people in Toledo, Ohio were watching the top-rated shows on television, and there would suddenly be a gay character who was not unsympathetic, who was appealing, who was pleasurable to watch, who was amusing and fun and funny and
right.
was desirable. And the bigotry directed at them was what was unattractive. That was unattractive. So I think you're partly right, Richard. I think that there is progress totally being made. But I must say that in television shows from back then and then earlier, one of my favorite movies of all time, I can't watch it. I can't watch the last few minutes of it without bursting into tears. The Best Years of Our Lives.
Oh, sure.
The movie Best Years of Our Lives is what, 60 years old now. And it is about the fact that even in small town America, people are shaking loose from those bigotries. The famous scene in the soda fountain, the Woolworths or whatever, where Dana
right.
Andrews stands up for Harold with his clawed hands, you know, the hands with the that have been amputated and he lost his hands in the war.
Right.
And that customer is espousing fascistic attitudes in it's small town America. That's like some suburb somewhere. And even Dana Andrews stands up and says, you know, your attitudes are not acceptable. And I think that there's something, I hope, good in the human heart. And sometimes it's a small flickering flame, but I think that it can be found. And I think it's reaching bonfire proportions now. I think it's shocking that an entire political party is not washing its hands of this kind of behavior and disowning.
I remember when I was touring the state of Arkansas in the early 90s, I played in a city called Monticello, Arkansas, and there was a judge that hosted me there, okay? And he was about as right-wing and about as bigoted as they come, okay? And he was a member of his family was a member of the Klan. He said he told me that the Klan was strictly a civic organization. That's what he told me.
Right.
He did tell me something else that was interesting. He said that in the 50s and 60s, that small town America, and I don't know how to take this or if it's true, but he told me that small town America was growing. The young people were growing tired of the way that black people were being treated. Now, I don't know how to take that or with a grain of salt or what, but that's what he said, because he resented the fact that Eisenhower sent in the National Guard into Arkansas. But, you know, he might have been full of crap. Who knows?
Well, you have to remember that Arkansas is also the state that produced Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. So there's all sorts of anomalies waiting around.
Isn't that life? That's life, though, isn't it?
Yes, Jimmy Carter came from Georgia. I mean, look at Jimmy Carter. I'm going to be curious to say, and I don't want to get into a whole George Bush thing. My own personal feelings about George Bush and what he did that was good and what he did not do that was good.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of handkerchief dabbing at the eyes right now about the loss of, you know, H.W. Bush.
Right.
When this settles down, I think a lot of people are going to be posting, you know, the clear facts of and statistically accurate things that he did and did not do that were not appealing, and that he came from a family that did unappealing things. But if this is the kind of boo-hooing and sobbing over George Bush that we have now, I can't wait to see what people do about Jimmy Carter, who, though not perhaps a warlike president or a virile president, was certainly someone who, after his presidency, has become
an icon
of civic mindedness and generosity and
right.
and open mindedness. I mean, this man is going out at 94. George Bush is 94. Jimmy Carter can't be much younger, and he's going out and helping to build homes for the homeless.
When you say Jimmy Carter,
what his legacy is going to be?
Well, when you say Jimmy Carter, I get a hankering for Billy Beer. Did you ever have Billy Beer?
No, I didn't.
No.
Billy Beer and and his daughter and his wife were. I found that his family was like an embarrassment for him. I felt that they were all kinds of embarrassment.
But you remember Billy Beer, though, don't you?
I certainly do, and I remember Billy Carter vividly.
Yeah,
I mean, he was
just like look at William Jefferson's brother Roger.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like these poor presidents with their families, you know, that they gotta like hide away in attics or closets or stuff.
Well, even Thomas Jefferson had a brother that was like that got in a lot of trouble, who wasn't very bright. Thomas Jefferson, of all people.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
There's like you say, it's all full of dichotomies and contradictions and you know, but that's the human condition. You know, the human condition is not always going to strict logic all the time because we're not always logical
movies.
Creatures.
It's not Hollywood movies. The scripts are very different. You know, if you really do Wikipedia Fanny Bryce, you find out that her life her career ascent was not so clean and sparkly, you know, in 15 minutes flat.
Hey, Mr. Arnstein, here I am.
Yeah, it wasn't a roller skating number, and then she was instantly, you know,
I'd rather be blue thinking of you. I'd rather be blue over you. Yeah, you're so true.
I was going to say that I'm going to be curious to see what happens in the next, I mean, if we're still all here, what happens in the next 10 years and 20 years with Trump's legacy.
Do you believe that mankind is maybe not in our lifetime and maybe generations down the road or centuries down the road, but do you believe that eventually mankind will destroy himself?
No.
Well, we only have 10 minutes left in the show, so that's an open statement that I think we're going to have to pass on, Richard. Richard, it's Mummy's job and Gwendolyn's to look at the clock and say, oh, dear, that's like trying to carve the famous 20-story high sign for Ben-Hur with the chariots racing around at the bottom of it. It's like, do you think the world will end in fire or ice, you know, and by human hands? I'm not sure. But I actually have started working
but
on
the question
story.
But the
story
bottom line is, do you
that.
Have hope? Do you have hope? That's the question.
Yes.
That's the underlying question underneath that question.
I think that I operate, I feel like I'm a pessimist. But in fact, my actions and my words are more often about optimism. And people have come up to me, strangers have said, you are one of the most optimistic and positive people I've ever seen.
Well, you just said your experiences in Middletown America were very positive.
But I feel like I'm negative. Yes, but I feel like I'm a very negative person. Maybe it's I'm very personally negative, but I'm not negative about the human condition or about human beings. I'm hoping that people are drawn more to kindness and love and respect and
amen.
Mercy. So,
amen. And on that note, I will say, amen. And I will think of Leslie Caron and Gene Kelly dancing the blues in An American in Paris and be happy thoughts.
I'm glad you called in, Richard. Thank you.
It's nice to talk
Richard,
to you.
If I don't talk to you beforehand, have a good holiday season and have a wonderful Hanukkah tonight. Are you
Thank
celebrating?
Thank you. Yes, second night of Hanukkah. That's right.
Did you
All right, my friend. It's good
you
to talk to you.
Up?
Of course.
Did you have a menorah?
Of course. Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, let's light the menorah.
What is the present for the second night? What kind of present is it?
I'm not sure. I mean, what you know, it's like we really don't exchange presents, and I mean, we really never did. It just like the just remember. I try to just remember the story of the Maccabees. You know, it's more of a children's. It's not a major holiday, Hanukkah. But
no, of course not. But my first boyfriend was Jewish, and he was not a practicing Jewish man.
Right.
But I claimed to be a Gentile who did know about Hanukkah, and I told him the story of the Maccabees and everything, and about the oil and everything, and how it kept burning, et cetera, et cetera. And then I told him that each night was a special night of gift giving, and I said that the first night was Van Cleef and Arpels. And the second night was Cartier, and the third night was Tiffany, and the fourth night And we walked around New York and we went shopping every night of Hanukkah. It was the most delightful Hanukkah. And I never let him be the wiser until, of course, he found out much later. And then he was a little cross with Mummy, but he did
but
admire
told
how well
but Mummy told
well
me that the fourth night of Hanukkah was Tiffany.
And Bendel's and Bonwit Teller. And yes, exactly.
Oh, those
were
the days,
Bonwit.
Yeah.
Yes,
those stores are all closing, by the way. I read one of those stories is closing.
Oh, they're gone. Bendel's just closed this week.
Oh,
so
dear.
That is the end of an age. That is the end of an age. And people who have never been to Bendel's, that was an experience because it was the strangest, most mystical and wonderful
Would
store.
Would they come out and model for you the dresses and stuff?
Yes, and that was the men. It was extraordinary.
Oh, the men would
anyway,
come out and model suits. The men would come out and model suits then.
Yeah, or dresses, depending on if you were a plus size girl.
They had men's model dresses.
Well, if you were a plus size girl, you couldn't find. Sometimes the staff was all size sixes and eights. If you were a 2X girl, you'd have to have one of the senior men come out in your dress, you know, and that's why they always shaved appropriately. Anyway, I've got to run.
Okay.
We're running out of time.
All right. Nice to chat with you.
Love you, Jim.
Happy holidays to you, Gwendolyn.
Thank you, Richard. You
and thank
too.
You for producing Mummy and bringing him to the internet and to so we can enjoy his brilliance.
I'm so happy to.
All right, we will talk to you later, Richard.
Okay,
bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Well, I saw that we had another call, but they apparently gave up. Did we have another call? I think we did. Anyway, I want to close with a couple of things. Again, tonight is we might have on Christmas Eve a very special edition. We're working on that idea right now, a special edition of Come Now, Don't Sulk for Christmas Eve. And we might invite three ghosts from Christmas past, present, and future, and Mummy might be our own Ebenezer Scrooge. What would the female version of Ebenezer be? I'm not sure. Ebenezer. Anyway, we'll figure that out. I want to remind everybody that we are on every Friday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time now. That's not Eastern Daylight Time. It's Eastern Standard Time. Check your own listing. That would be 7 Central, 6 Mountain Time, and 5 o'clock. Richard was just calling us at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. We have listeners from all over the world, which we're very thrilled with. And if you ever miss a show, you haven't missed a show, because all you have to do is go to the wonderful, wonderful Blog Talk Radio and go to Gwendolyn's incredible production company, which we owe everything to, Here Be Monsters, and look for the Sybil Brunchen past episodes there. They are all archived there and ready to be listened to. Again, that's Blog Talk Radio, and that is Here Be Monsters. And I'm very proud to be part of the Here Be Monsters studio system. So if you want to think of Here Be Monsters as being MGM or CBS, then Mummy is one of the lucky people that gets to perform on there. And Come Now, Don't Sulk is the fortunate program that's part of their stable of talent. I'd like to remind you also that our sponsor always is DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Do go there and check them out. Also, on Facebook, I'm going to address this very quickly. I have been pulling stories and recipes and everything off my Facebook pages and mounting them on my two website blogs. You can visit Mummy anytime you want at SybilSays.com and SybilBrunchen.com. Spelled exactly the way they sound, except for Sybil Says, SybilSez.com. Visit me there. You can leave comments and likes and loves and whatever you'd like and messages there for me. And I am going to be pulling a lot of my things off Facebook now and mounting links there, which when you click on the link, you'll see it light up. So when you drag your cursor, the little arrow that turns into a hand, and you put it on the link, which is the jumble of letters and numbers that Mummy posts after a statement or a photograph, you'll see it light up. It'll sort of glow. And then you click on that, and it will take you right to SybilSays.com or SybilBrunchen.com. Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. right? So easy to do. You just go right there, and it's a new experience for you old people like me who haven't learned how to use the computer. It's always good to learn new things. Mummy had to learn it at a late age, and you can too. Let Mummy help you, okay, learning new things. And you can visit other websites and all sorts of things. Why am I leaving Facebook? Because I am tired of its first of all, its technical problems are grotesque. I had to change my password 4 times finally last week. The final count was 4 times last week because I was being rehacked or whatever. So Facebook would notify me that I needed to change my password again. This is difficult to do when I'm out on the road or I'm on my phone instead of on my laptop. If I'm not at the hotel room with my laptop and with my password list there and everything, I can't do it. So I was stranded several times because I needed to change my password. I'm tired. I'm tired of servicing Mark Zuckerberg and that whore of Babylon chairman of the board he's got. And they're both worth, you know, billions. And I'm sick to death of financing them. I'm sick of sending her to Van Cleef and Arpels. And I'm sick of him. We learned who he was in the TV show, in the movie. What was it? The Network or whatever it was?
Social Network.
The Social Network, yeah, whatever it was. We saw who he was in that movie. We saw the kind of person he was. He founded Facebook in a specious way. It was already riddled with scandal and with mendacity when it was founded. So, and it's continued, selling lists to people, selling our names, our information. It's stupid. It stinks. And he should know better. He's a white, educated Jewish man. He should know better. And as far as I'm concerned, he's trash. He's slum trash. And he just happens to have billions of dollars. But the way he is running Facebook and what's going on with it is totally annoying. I'm sick of the politics, and I'm sick of the lousy service. So even if his politics were straightened out, the service of Facebook is completely faulty. And I'm sick of financing them with my hard-earned talent. So I am pulling my talent off Facebook and putting it elsewhere. I will be sending links to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you can find me there. In the meantime, for those of you who are Lollipop Guilders, I created the Lollipop Guild on Facebook for you people, and it is yours. It is my gift to you. I will check in, and I will even post things that are nice and fun there. I will not be taking that down, nor will I be removing things. I will post links to stories that will be fun and funny and happy. And so I will continue to post happy news on that particular page. So, but you people who are members of the Lollipop Guild, and I encourage all of you to join, that is your web. That's your Facebook page now. You have had it all along, and it remains yours. And Mummy will do nothing to pull it. Okay, so that's yours. So that's another piece of news I got rid of. Facebook etiquette. In this nice season, I'd like to urge all of you: if you read somebody's post, if you read one of my posts, I would appreciate it if you would press the thumbs up, or the heart, or the mad face, or the sad face, or the disagree face. You are reading things and not acknowledging that you're reading them. There's no reason why you can't press one of those icons and say, oh, yes, I read that. You don't have to agree with what someone posts. You can put the mad face if you want, or you can put the mad face in agreement to the fact that they're mad. You can figure it out. But I'm tired of seeing that 85 people read something and only 5 of you posted an icon, and then only one of you comment. I'm also getting tired of posting congratulations and good wishes and happy birthday wishes on other people's pages and not having it acknowledged. You don't have to thank me, but just the smiley face, just to say thank you for wishing me a happy birthday. Okay? That's Facebook etiquette. We've talked about it before, and I want to encourage you to do it to everyone, not just to me, to everyone. Lubricate the wheels of good manners. Okay, by doing nice things. That's the oil of human kindness. Okay, last thing I'm going to mention, busy hands are happy hands. Some people are going downhill right now with winter on, with the onset of winter, and we're all going to crash after the holidays, and Mummy is going to be right there with you. I am notorious for becoming absolutely morose and suicidal on December 26th. Let's all help each other. Let's reach out to each other, and let's help ourselves. Take up little projects. Why don't you learn needlepoint? Take a pottery class. Why don't you take up square dancing? Why don't you do a weekly brunch on Sundays with your friends? Really, really a Sunday brunch with your friends every Sunday. Drag yourself out in the snowdrifts and do it. Okay? Let's make our hands be busy so that we can feel a little bit happier. I really am encouraging you because I speak from experience. I'm in the same boat as you. And on that note, I wish you all a good night. Gwendolyn, I love you. I will see
you
next Monday.
Next Monday.
All right. Yes, next Monday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Good night, everyone. I love you all.